in over the line, trying to drive the net was Larkin, and centering pass, brilliant save made by Samsonov! Sammy, echoing through the building!
Made some big saves still in the first to keep us as the score as it was, and obviously a couple massive saves down the stretch that kept the game to 4-4 before, you know, going into OT, so yeah, he's been amazing for us here these last couple weeks, and it's been great to see just his confidence just skyrocket.
He made some unbelievable stops that kept the game where it was tonight for us. So you can only ask him to do so much. I think some of those miscues were obviously on us, and we're to blame for that. But he came up with some big saves.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Yeah, sort of, kind of like. Not the last one.
Jack Campbell over here. Austin Matthews. Oh, it's all us. It's all my fault. How dare I?
Yeah. I mean, we just had this conversation about Alek Manoah putting a rosy touch on these outings that have been, like, less horrible as we move
but
along.
More thorny.
Right? Yeah, like, he walked the first four guys he faced in the complex lead in Dunedin.
Hard
and then
do worse.
Like, hit a guy. So that was bad. So he didn't do that. He only walked one guy, but he did give up four runs and eight hits over three and a third innings. That's bad.
Yes.
So, okay. Did Ilya Samsonov factually make some saves at the end of regulation to get the Maple Leafs into overtime where they would eventually lose to the Detroit Red Wings? Yeah, he did that.
Uh-huh.
That's good. And maybe it's better to be like a clutch goalie than a full 60-minute goalie. I guess
sure.
If you had to choose one, as long as you're still in the game
by the time the
end of regulation rolls along. But yeah, the idea that that's not concerning his last two starts, that's not correct either. I know what they have to say, but yeah, no, it's a major concern.
Yeah, of course. How can it not be? It's the guy who at one point in time, and it wasn't just him, but it appeared to be shooting the season in the foot. He found his footing. He has given this team excellent goaltending up until the last two games. But yeah, there's no way to look at that and not be at least a little concerned. I will say that there will be at least one game, whether they go on a run or not, there will be at least one game that feels like that, where the goalie's been bad and you need him to be good late on a night like that. So you can maybe take something out of it, sure. But the idea that this has been anything other than a like negative last two games for Samsonov, you can't look at it any other way.
Yeah, and if he had been yanked after the opening 20 minutes of that game on Saturday, there's absolutely no question that you need to get him in. I think tomorrow, maybe, against the... I mean, I know it stinks that it's the Panthers team that you're going to play in the first round most likely, but you need to get the positive vibes going like as soon as possible.
Oh, I would have said still go to him Wednesday. If that was me.
Okay.
Because then you just dress a lesser than lineup against your Panthers, and then you still have a fresh team for... But as Sheldon said, I guess, like, the cap machinations, you can't...
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I don't discount the possibility that his season might be over.
Regular season.
Yeah. Let's talk to Gord Stellick. What's going on, Gordo?
Gentlemen, all good. 1 week next Monday, we'll be talking actual playoff hockey, so that's always a great time of the year.
Yeah. It'll be stressful, but always exciting. All right, you know what? We shouldn't start talking goaltending with you. We should talk Austin Matthews and his deployment on Saturday, almost 24 minutes, and then like had the 3.5-minute shift interrupted by the timeout. Sheldon Keefe said, though, that we all know the priority here, and it's making sure everybody's tip-top shape for the postseason, which, I mean, maybe you can do both, but it was also jarring after the 69th goal to see him on the breakaway almost score 70 and then go head first into the end boards. There's no way to protect against that. But what did you make of the deployment of Austin Matthews on Saturday? And then the comments afterwards from Sheldon Keefe.
Well, you know, Sheldon's kind of like me in the sense that I'm surprised how much I'm getting caught up in it. You know, I just thought, okay, I didn't think he was going to get it a few weeks ago. And then all of a sudden, okay, making a good run at it, that would be neat too. Man, what a vibe there is at home in these games that are kind of meaningless, you know, but just what a vibe. And it just seems obviously everybody's feeding him. So it's become, I was talking to Gentile and that on the weekend, just saying it's almost become like a community service thing that you're going to, you know, everyone's pitching and everyone's doing their best, the barn raising, you know, to get Austin that 70th. So I don't just really like it's a really, really, you know, I mean, it's not an NHL record for most goals, but really as far as nowadays in 2005 and whatever, it's an incredible standard. So I was cool with it. I you really got no choice at this particular point. It's all everybody's talking about.
Yeah, I think if you were going to do a barn raising, you need Jake Muzzin. He looks most Mennonite.
He
I think,
really
with the
does.
Beard.
He really does. Yeah, that's the guy.
I think so.
Kyle Clifford, I feel like I haven't seen him in a while. It has been a while, but I feel like he could fit right in there as well. Clifford and Muzzin, not helping the Leafs right now, but should they raise a barn, we have the right guys for the job. So the job left at hand, obviously playoffs, but two games. Do you play him in both? Do you play him in one? Do you try to get it over with against Florida, sit him against Tampa? How do you handle the two games coming up this week with Matthews specifically, Gordo?
Well, no problem playing him in both. If he does get a goal in the first game, then you do have that option. And game number 82, we've talked about that, whatever. And especially since that Connor McDavid injury, even though the Oilers weren't going in the playoffs that year, but in game number 82, it's kind of like, okay, about taking chances. So, I mean, that's what I do. I mean, again, don't overthink it. If he doesn't have it, you'll play on both games. If he does happen to get it in the first game, then he's probably one of the guys you sit.
Yeah, is there any worry about the fact that that first game comes against the Panthers team and it's entirely possible that's who you end up playing in the first round? And, you know, I don't think they're going to dress, you know, 18 goons who are going to be out there just taking runs at Matthews. But I think every guy that is dressed is going to spend the entirety of the night taking runs at Matthews. Is there any concern about Florida doing anything? Again, it's not, no one's going to go out there and deliberately two-hand him in upside the head and try to injure him in that way. But they're going to try to hurt him if that makes sense. Like, how much, if at all, do you weigh that into the equation with him? And part of it is the identity of that Panthers team, is they want to be mean, they want to be nasty, they want to finish everything anyways.
Well, and isn't that supposedly the identity of this little bit different Toronto Maple Leaf team since they played Boston last time, what Domi did when Austin Matthews was hit and the response there? So, you know, it's to a degree, maybe it's playoff hockey starting a game early, because that's going to be playoff hockey. That's what they're going to do in playoff hockey. And last year is actually a bunting hit on Cernak that was, Cernak that was the big thing, hurt a defenseman right on Tampa Bay, was a big factor in the first round of the playoffs. So, I mean, these kind of things happen. It becomes a very physical brand of hockey, but you can't play any kind of games out of, well, I would say fear, that's not the right word, but just, like being worrisome that way. I mean, you've got a team that's had a really appropriate physical response themselves the last half of the season.
So, yeah, you can't operate in fear, but you also, I guess, shouldn't really lose sight of what your number one goal is. And again, Sheldon Keefe was on the record as saying what his number one goal is and what it should be. It's, hey, it's the postseason, and it'd be nice to see Austin Matthews score goal number 770. You know, it'd be nicer. The Leafs going on a long postseason run. Everybody understands this, right? Like, there's not a person in that locker room that disagrees with that. And you could tell, again, by the postgame comments that he was almost like sheepish the way he deployed Austin Matthews in that game. Like, is there at all a concern that, like, he's lost the plot a little bit with or going opposite of what his initial instincts were when it came to Matthews' deployment?
Yeah, but that's part of what, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights are a great example about adapting. They intended to build from within, and then things changed from the get-go, and they became a team that, you know, went after money players and veteran players and won a Stanley Cup because they adjusted, right, you know, almost right away. And in this case, to a lesser extent, like I said, I just, like, getting caught up in this particular goal or whatever you want to call it, changed things a bit. And I don't mind him pivoting. You know, the depth part has really been a prominent part of late as far as the Leafs, and hopefully that provides more optimism in the playoffs. You know, certainly, yeah, you don't like that you're blowing leads. You don't like that your PK is not so good right now. You don't like that there's been ordinary goaltending in the last week after it's all been pretty good, whatever. But again, it's a clean slate when the first game of the playoffs starts.
Yeah, it is. You know, going back to, you mentioned the Domi fight when he jumped in to defend Matthews, and I guess it was the Thursday game there. I feel like a big silver lining out of that is that it forced Sheldon Keefe to have to play Marner and Matthews back together. And I mean, everybody's forcing it to Matthews right now, but I just remember back to that game. Boy, Marner was on a different level. I feel like it kind of played out perfectly from Keefe's perspective there, that he was forced to reunite Matthews and Marner. It didn't immediately click, and now he kind of has all the ammunition. I mean, he's the coach. He could set the lines as he wants, but now he has the proof to say, look, You guys got back out there. You got to play together. You got basically half a game of it, and it didn't result in anything. It feels like that was kind of a best-case scenario from Keefe, just going back to that game last week where he did get to reunite those two, but it didn't work, and now he's able to kind of keep the line slightly more spread out the way he has with Domi, Bertuzzi, and Matthews staying on that top line.
Yeah, you know, I saw it, again, it's almost from the word go, the whole Nylander thing at the start of the year, you know, about playing center and just on and on. I'm not sure where Sheldon Keefe's head's at right now about that. Obviously, he's been trying a lot of different things, which that they've been in a good place to do that standings-wise. And you got to figure out something better in the playoffs than other years. And last year, still unbelievably, like, you know, this team is offense is their strength, but seven consecutive playoff games, they didn't score more than two goals in any of their last seven consecutive playoff games. So whether it means stacking a couple lines or the options about having more depth and whatever, that's you know, Sheldon Keefe's the bench coach. That's going to be a huge part of his success and his future and the team's this year in the playoffs. So he's just tried a lot of different things. There's a lot of different options, and we'll see how he plays it.
Where are you on the goaltending today?
I'd start Martin Jones the first game and Matt Murray the second. I'd really screw it up.
That'd be bad.
I'd give them one each. Yeah, I'd give them one each. So you say, okay, you want to give the starter against Florida because you're going to play them I probably would lean that way, who your game one starter is going to be, and then the other play the game against Tampa Bay. But anyway, that's what I would do.
Yeah, okay. So you feel good enough about Ilya Samsonov having a good final 40 minutes in that game, despite giving up the overtime goal. But yeah, the opening 20 was horrific. Like, where are you? Has his play in the last two games, and then considering, you know, the first half of the season before December, has that changed your opinion of him going into the postseason, or the leash you might have on him going into a first-round series against the Panthers?
I'm very comfortable with Leaf goaltending. I'm not overly confident with Leaf goaltending. I was extremely confident with Freddie Anderson at the end of regular seasons, and Freddie didn't give big playoff goaltending when it was needed. So, you know, we'll see what happens. They've got a couple of, I think, really good options in Samsonov, and I've always just been really big on Joe Woll. I was big on how he played last year in the playoffs, and everything's got to be better. You know, if you're going to go further, deeper in the playoffs, everything's got to be a little bit better. And goaltending, I mean, huge. Goaltending, huge, huge, huge. There's going to be one or two series somewhere decided on goaltending alone. Hopefully it's not against Toronto.
Yeah, Gordo, by the next time we talk to you, the playoffs will have started. It can be an Eastern Conference team. It can be a Western Conference team. That's how it works. We have two conferences. You can pick from either one. Who is your cup favorite right now? Who do you think just is in the kind of best position heading into the playoffs?
Well, I'm sticking with Carolina, and of course, I like the ads they made at the trade deadline. And it's funny we're talking about Freddie Anderson again, right? About goaltending and that. So I don't know if it's more wide open than usual, but I really just really like it. Like I said at the start of the year when we chatted that there'll be 25 teams expecting to be the player in the playoffs, so nine are going to be pissed off, and that's kind of shaken out. And I think there's about seven teams anyway that expect to be in the Stanley Cup final, so there'll be at least five that are pissed off. So I really like it. I like that there's just a lot of balls in the air out there.
Yeah, and the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, always the best. And it's fast approaching. Gordo, thanks, buddy.
See you guys.
There is the great Gord Stellick, who would play... Okay, so when he first said, like, Martin Jones and Matt Murray, I was like, ha ha, first two games of the playoffs.
Yeah.
He meant this week.
Yeah.
Against the Panthers and Lightning, which I like I said, going into the conversation with Gord Stellick, I wouldn't rule out that possibility. I think it's not the worst thing in the world to have Ilya Samsonov, okay, overcome the struggles of that first period. And again, look pretty good down the stretch in the final 40 minutes against a Red Wings team that was desperate to pick up the 2 points. And the Maple Leafs with a furious comeback to erase a 3-goal deficit, and they lose in overtime, yada, yada, yada. It's 3-3. It has no correlation to the postseason. That be his final moment of the regular season, as long as, like, you're not afraid of rust. I don't know. You got to ask the player, I guess. Yep. But that be it, and then you rest everybody, and maybe Martin Jones starts both games. I don't know, cap-wise, whether you can activate Matt Murray in the second game. It might be a nice little carrot for him, though, as well. I think that's a very real possibility.
Yeah, I do as well. I think that with much more so with Samsonov than with Matthews, you just have to go to the player and find out what he needs. I think if Samsonov is a guy who, and I think the good thing is, it's unfortunate that we've had to, but the Leafs have had a lot of conversations about Ilya Samsonov's mental state and what's best for it this year. They've done this dance a bunch of times before. What's it going to take to get him right? I don't know. Maybe he goes down to like the Club Med that is Coca-Cola Coliseum and hangs out with the Marlies for a week. Maybe that's the, it worked so well the last time. Why don't you just do it again? So give him a little spa week right before playoffs start. I'm half joking, but this thing with goaltending, like it's all voodoo. It's not guessing because we wouldn't have scouts and there wouldn't be goalie coaches and everything. But man, it is the position. There's no position in sport that matters more that we know less about than this. And I think that this position and what to do with it just leads perfectly into it.
Yeah. We'll have a longer discussion about this tomorrow, but I think tomorrow's game is a real weird, interesting one to think about, considering like there is still factually something on the line for the Panthers, their final game of the season. It's the team that the Leafs are very likely to play in the first round of the postseason. Like, what kind of a lineup do you ice? What kind of a game plan do you deploy? How much are you holding back? Like, I can't imagine there's too many secrets considering these two teams just played each other in the second round last season. They played each other plenty during the regular season this year. But I don't know, is there something about like having confidence scoring on a Sergei Bobrovsky who you couldn't in those five games a season ago? I can't imagine he's playing in tomorrow's game. The physicality element that you mentioned, like I don't know what to expect out of a weirdo final game of the season for the Panthers and the second last for the Leafs.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not the NFL, right, where you're going, oh, let's just do super vanilla packages and play calling. It's not that, but I don't know. If you have a new little wrinkle in your power play or you're trying to move guys around, you're certainly not doing that in tomorrow's game. And the physicality thing is the thing I keep coming back to. I think that if you want to play Austin Matthews in that game, you can only play it so physically, I think, to a certain extent. Like, you don't want it to turn into one of those games, but if he's not playing in it, then I think you can take a slightly different tact with the way you dress your lineup and the way you want to play that game. I think the best thing about this, and to your point, not meaningless for the Panthers, but kind of meaningless for the Panthers, the best thing about this meaningless 81st game of the season tomorrow is that we can tease so much out of it anyway. Like, it's a Rorschach test, that game tomorrow.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to tell you what I saw on Wednesday.
I'm glad we don't have to see any more Toronto Raptors games. Mercifully, their season has come to a close at 25-57. Yeah, it sucked. A lot of it sucked.
Agreed.
Like after the initial Knicks trade, like that was fun for a fleeting second.
God, what a blip, eh? Remember those happy times?
Sure.
Having an actual basketball conversation about Emmanuel Quickly?
Yeah. Michael Grange with a great write-up on Sportsnet.ca today outlining like the myriad of bizarro, horrifying, like, and sometimes tragic things that have happened to the Raptors this season. The lasting thing for me will be that we didn't learn too much about anything. That was the most frustrating part. It's like, hey, is Darko Rajakovic a good coach? Couldn't really tell you because it's not fair to judge him on anything that took place this season. Is there chemistry between Scotty, RJ, Emmanuel Quickly, Jakob Poeltl? Like, maybe.
Who knows?
I'm not sure. Here's the one thing I think that we can answer pretty definitively. That Grady Dick looks like, you know, a capable NBA player, which was in doubt.
Very much so.
In the early stages of his NBA career, that he can now, you know, be at least competent three-point shooter. But that's the most frustrating thing, is that you didn't learn anything about this season. You didn't learn. There's no way to take what you got out of this year and apply it to next season and the potential for growth for this team or where this team is headed in the future. It was just like this season didn't happen.
Yeah, at least if you gave the team a letter grade of F, you would say, okay, we need to make wide sweeping changes here. I think the biggest question mark, and not that they were going to make a change one way or another after the season, I think the biggest question mark is Coach Darko. I think you look at what this team has, and you know, you can have all the questions you want about Emmanuel Quickly and Scotty Barnes. There's a certain level of floor that I think we realize what those players are. The ceiling is very much still in question, but you kind of know where the floor is there. With Darko, I mean, go back to the conversations we were having early on in the year. We were wondering if that floor was pretty low. you can't take anything away from it. So if anybody should be thankful for the way the season went, wild thing to say, I know, but it is Coach Darko, because he almost has a second first season again next year. How can you look at it as anything but? The Grady Dick is the lone positive, quite honestly, to take out of the season. And even that is a little bit of grasping for straws. It's a guy who started to play better, but he only played better when the minutes were there for the taking and not having to earn them, if that makes any sense. And maybe that's exactly what a young player needs, is just to get his feet wet, get confident. He's no longer a G League guy kind of bumping up and down. But even that positive, it's not a... you know, a shining golden star. It's like a little check next to the box. Yes. Good job. Your lottery pick is a competent player. Congrats.
Yeah. Shot 36.5% from three.
Okay.
It's good.
Numbers would have been better in the second half of the season, because I remember those numbers were putrid to start.
The sample was larger for him, though, as well, the second half of the season. Tampa Tank was the worst season in Raptors' recent history, I guess, kind of, sort of. I mean, it's hard to separate world events.
Yeah.
From the sports thing that happened. But yeah, that was, the Raptors played a whole season where their home was Tampa. That's bad.
It was
not good. I will say that was more watchable than what we saw down the stretch here, because there was more on the line. Like, there was at least a rooting interest in that team losing.
Yeah.
And it resulted in Scottie Barnes. That's awesome. It's like, what better situation to tank in than where your home games are not at home? I went to a home game down the stretch for this team.
Oh, that's right. You did.
Against the Thunder. And got to tell you, not watchable. Nothing learned.
Yep.
No future stars. No pieces of the solution going forward. A bunch of guys that have no NBA future. And then at the end of the day, it's like 50-50 whether they have a first-round pick or not. You weren't told explicitly what we're rooting for, what we're going towards. Because there's really no clear direction, because, of course, if they end up in a top six spot, which is about, according to the stats, like about 50-50 shot that they convey their pick to the Spurs, or they hold on to it themselves. And we know there's not exactly some prize pig out there for them in the lottery this season. I can make the argument that the Tampa Tank was a more watchable NBA season than what we just witnessed for 82 games, but like the final 20 or 30.
It's just so funny the way the year started to beating the Timberwolves, a team that will like not ultimately win anything, but like is going to have a very, very successful season. The other thing about the Tampa Tank is it was still touching the Raptors team you cared about. Like, there was name brand Raptors on that team. Like, you know, Scottie Barnes, he's here. He hasn't been. He's been hurt for so much of the year. Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, those guys you're excited to build around, but they're not really a part of the team this year. They've been hurt so much, and obviously the tragedy that happened with RJ, and like, you don't hold any of that against him, of course, but you don't even feel a connection. I mean, RJ's different because of the passport thing, but you haven't had a chance to build a connection with those guys, at least the Tampa Tank. Yes, there were a ton of people on that roster that we will never think of again, but like your Kyle Lowry was poking around. Like, you still had some of the pieces from the championship there. That's why it was so brutal. And yeah, that's why I think you can easily make the case that and you had something to show for it. The other thing about this lottery protected pick, and does it go to the Spurs, is that you're going to live in hell with it no matter what, because so long as that person can just, I don't know, have one competent NBA skill, they're going to look great next to Wembanyama, whoever that pick inevitably ends up being. Like, it will be a classic scenario of them being able to take a player that fits a very specific role next to the freak of all freaks. Whereas if that player would have been a Raptor, it never would have worked out that way. And I'm not even doing a, like, everything comes up poor for the Raptors. It's just whoever you put next to Wembanyama is going to look great.
I'll tell you what I'm rooting for is that this pick, does convey to the Spurs. And you're right. Like, it might look bad because of the environment that young player is going to join. But if the Raptors have their own first round pick this year, that means that the same protections exist for next year's draft.
Totally.
And that's like the good draft. And also, like, if you manage to get yourself into a top six position next year, that it turns into a second round pick, which is like ideal.
Yeah.
But like, I would like to go into a year where you actually have like what you would hope are part of the solution here in your starting lineup. Like, incentivized to win games.
Agreed.
And not de-incentivized. So, yeah, convey your pick.
Yep.
As painful as it might be to give up the seventh overall selection in the NBA draft, let's go into a year where, like, winning is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, again, trying to get involved in the Cooper flag of it all,
right,
despite the fact that you have, you would hope,
yeah,
trading away the players that they did to acquire these players, part of the solution. Like, yeah, tanking with R.J. Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley and Scotty Barnes, mm-hmm, in the lineup all season long, that would be a tough one to swallow.
No, you don't want that. And this is very off-brand for the show, but just, like, get ready for the Cooper flag discourse. It's coming.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of, like, the great American hope returning in basketball. Like, look at all the young, great players in this league. They ain't American. Mm-hmm. The hype for that guy playing at Duke, it is going to be like J.J. Redick-esque. And mm-hmm, quite honestly, I can't wait.
No, it'll be fun. It'll be also interesting. I don't know if fun is the word, but to see what Masai Ujiri says this week.
He's going to wait 100 years to talk again. It's going to be like after the NBA Finals. Like,
I think
what?
He's
had track down Ujiri.
Yeah. I don't think there's like a cooling off period necessary for Masai Ujiri. I think he had his thoughts collected pretty neatly.
It would be
well before yesterday.
It would be a wild, like, lean into the ultimate competitor brand of, like, he just can't talk. It's still too raw. It's like, what has he been sitting on? What's he thinking about?
Yeah. All right, when we come back, Scottie Scheffler did the thing that he was predicted to do, which is not easy to do in that sport. Talk about the Masters next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. So 2019 will be still the last time we had a real, real close, exciting final nine at the Masters. Looked like we were headed there yesterday.
Look at you, not calling it the back nine.
Yeah, second nine, buddy. Come on.
Hey, you don't want them to, like, tase you in the neck should you ever go back.
The patrons were expecting fireworks on the second nine yesterday. Instead, they got Ludvig Åberg,
mm-hmm, Luda,
dunking it,
yeah,
in the water on 11.
Yeah.
Max Homa getting the worst break of all breaks on, mm-hmm, 12. And Scottie Scheffler moonwalking his way to a second Masters title in a four-stroke victory. Here are his last four starts.
Mm.
Win.
Yeah.
Win. T2, win.
Seems good.
He's we talked about this going in, talked about it at the players.
Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to be that close to, like, even money to win a golf tournament. Because,
mm-hmm,
I mean, the Masters, I guess, is a little different because it's a short field. But there are so many golfers, and the difference between them is so minuscule, mm-hmm, that you should not be viewed in the light that Vegas has viewed him, unless you're Tiger Woods. Well, yep. I don't know. Scotty, it's only his second major title. Both are at Augusta. But he's primed for a Tiger-like run right now.
Yeah, this is... A lot of people were doing the build-up to the Masters, especially after the win at the Arnold Palmer, the win at the Players, the second place finish. Like, it's just... It is remarkable what he's done, but he needed this one. It wouldn't have halted his momentum in terms of what he's doing as a golfer if he would have had, like, a top five or a top 10 finish at the Masters. We all would have said, to your point, it's hard to win a golf tournament. We would have said, it's a guy, peak of his powers, didn't get the right breaks, just didn't have it this week, and look at where he still finishes. But this stamped home the great run that he's on. Could you imagine if he, again, has a T10 this week and then goes and wins the next, not even just ho-hum event, the next elevated event. Not a major, but another
which
elevated.
Which is this week?
Yeah, it's a weird sky. Don't get me.
Why?
Please.
What are you doing, PGA Tour?
I don't know. I would love to be able to explain.
Is Scotty going
to
play this week?
Because
his wife is still due with their first child.
I'd imagine not.
But doesn't he get dinged? Like, how does that work? That was the whole thing about the elevated events.
Yeah, well, I don't know this definitively, but I believe there would be, like, an exemption of sorts for, like, pregnant wife. I feel like that's I don't know.
No, punish him.
Okay, I'm fine with that. I actually have no issue with it. But The point I want to make is that I think this was needed to stamp home his greatness. The idea that he would have been this great golfer sitting on one major, even heading into the middle of this summer. And then the casual is like, wait, hold on. This is the best guy. He has one of these things. Rory, the guy who sucks and chokes all the time. He has four. Koepka doesn't even play professional golf anymore, apparently. And he has five of these things. He needed it to happen. The other thing about it was Scheffler. And I don't know, maybe you're of different mind of this for me, is I'm kind of done caring. And this is me as a golf fan. This is not me as a sport fan. I'm kind of done caring about the crossover sex appeal. You know what's sexy and crosses over? Absolute sheer dominance. And this is crazy to say because this is as dominant a run as we have seen since peak Tiger. It's not there yet. It needs to continue for it to truly kind of take hold in the public consciousness. But this is what a, and look, let's just be honest about what golf is. It's a major sport four times a year. But other than that, it's a fringe sport for a lot of people. You need a dominant figure that everybody can point to and look at. And if he's boring, guess what? You know what's really, like, kind of boring? Tiger Woods.
I agree, but here's the difference for me. And sure. I'm just speaking from my own sensibilities. I was rooting for Tiger.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to see dominance.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's the fact that we have seen someone as dominant as Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't want to see Scottie Scheffler go on that run. Also, because if he does...
Yeah.
We'll always have the world, like the live guys are over there. Like, oh,
well, that's why doing it in majors is so important.
Sure. Okay. So he has another one, and I guess we can wait again. What's the next one? The PGA. Order's all messed up. It used to be Glory's last shot. Like, oh, well, they had a nice branding with
that. It was
that.
Great. I know.
Why did they do that? Anyways,
because you don't want to end the year in the worst major. That's why.
So there was always like, it was Tiger, unbelievable. He's blowing everyone away. And there was like a Phil or somebody else who was like one of the all-time greats, and Rory's still there. But like I have in front of me right now the official golf world rankings, and Scheffler obviously number one, Rory two. Like Xander Schauffele, like perennial choker without a major title, is three. Number four is still John Rahm, living off his success on the PGA Tour. Wyndham Clark has a major, but like Wyndham Clark really...
Well, he needed a big week and did not
have one. Hey, Victor Hovland's good. I mean... Oberg would be the guy.
Yep,
who's right now seventh in the world golf rankings.
Which is insane.
And that was not just his first ever Masters start; his first major start.
Played in a Ryder Cup and won one before he played in a major.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's like Patrick Cantlay. You think Scottie Scheffler's boring?
Yes.
And then like Max Homa, who's like got some personality, but again, like a guy that's okay. Are we going to look back on this generation of golf and say, "Wow, Max Homa, one of the all-time greats"? It's. I understand what you're saying. It's like it. I think one of the big issues with North American pro sports over the last few years has been this lack, because of salary caps, this lack of measuring stick team. And we have it in the NFL, and it's the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
And how great is that? Everyone's just trying to catch the Chiefs.
Yep.
And because of the salary cap of the NFL, everybody can sort of compete with the Chiefs because year over year they have to lose some great players, but they still get it done with the one guy, and they don't have these dominant regular seasons. But, yeah, it's just different with him.
Yeah.
It is. I can't exactly put my finger on it. What I think it is because I lived through the Tiger thing, and that was amazing, and I thought we'd never see it again, and we haven't seen it yet. Because we remember, like, it's early days in this. We were having some similar conversations about Jordan Spieth.
For sure.
Early days of his run. And Augusta. And, boy, it's incredible how quickly some of these guys can fall off. But I'm not rooting for him. That's the thing. I'm rooting for everybody else, and there's just not the depth of talent on the PGA Tour right now in normal PGA events. You're right. The majors are going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, as far as the PGA Tour, it's not great that he's just so much better than everybody else.
Well, that part I will go with you on. You're preaching to the choir. I don't even know if you're trying to make this point, and I'm just going to make one for you. Maybe you agree with it. Maybe you don't. It's like a way to go live. You ruined golf. Like, this is where I keep coming back to. That's why I think it was so important to have a guy who – and, you know, anyone who's heard me talk about him on the station knows no favorite of mine, but it was so important to have DeChambeau in the mix. That makes it feel, boy, did you. He's walking around. He's Scottie Scheffler's talking about his victory being on the cross. It's like Bryson walking around like he is Jesus with the amen corner post.
Yeah.
And then they told him to put it back. He's just such an unbelievable goober. He has the hole out to finish on Saturday. He's got his bubble-faced irons. Just everything about him. I missed him so much. I don't know if you remember this video. I had to go pull it up from the first Masters we got where Bryson was full, like speed chasing Bryson, and he is just unleashing nukes on the range, and Vijay Singh is standing there on his putter just watching it. That was me this weekend watching Bryson. Oh, I was so happy to have him back.
I loved, and you know what? In the media didn't take a wrong step either.
No.
Like, was asked about the fact that they can't have green guides or whatever, like the books. They can't have the green books. You can make your own book, but you can't.
You're not given one by the course.
I don't even think, like, in the practice round, you can bring a device for measuring the slope, but you can't even write it down.
Yeah.
It has to be, like, in your brain. And then the Masters, during the course of the tournament, can change things on the green.
Well, and they rip up the greens every year, and it's, like, little slight tweaks here and there. It's nuts.
Yeah, and instead of saying, well, this isn't fair, this is how I play the game, like, it's a very scientific thing, and, like, I understand how fast the greens are playing, and then in my practice rounds, I measure out how far back I have to bring the club, which makes a ton of sense. It's like he's trying to turn real golf into video game golf, which I do respect, but instead of saying, like, this isn't the way I'm going about it, he's like, I get it. This is different. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make it more art than science, and everybody else is figuring it out. I need to figure it out. I miss having that guy around. Love him or hate him, that he exists, that he's a different flavor. It just stinks that he goes back into the abyss that is LIV.
It does. And, you know, I wanted to talk to you about this on Friday when you took your vacation day and for sure didn't come into the studio.
Did you mention that?
I did exactly that. I was just like, obviously we miss Ben, who was not sitting here 3 minutes ago. I just like, kept saying that. So, you know, anyone who had the brain was like, oh, Ben was here.
Yeah.
But Rom, you know, to go just to like bring the LIV kind of, you know, rehashing into it here. I don't know if you saw he had a sit down interview on Thursday with like Marty Smith, I think is his name, who's like doing all the Masters interviews. And it's nothing we hadn't heard out of Jon Rahm before, but you see him at a press conference. He's a little more defensive. He's sitting at some dais somewhere. He was sitting in like, I don't know if it was the butler cabin, but some palatial room at Augusta. He's now a green jacket. Like, he has a green jacket. He's a Masters champion. And it felt like the weight of everything he had done with LIV had just kind of sat on him in that moment of, wow, I really gave it all up. He seemed to have think the game was just going to go, oh, my God, we lost Jon Rahm. We must all come back together. And that wasn't the sea change that he thought it was going to be. And Rahm is another massive guy. Like, I'd argue outside of Rory, Scheffler, who generates more headlines in the game? Like Bryson, we talk about him, but it's Rahm. Like, he's the guy who feels like the guy who should be kind of pushing for that number one, and just seeing the realization on his face. And again, I really do think there was something about it happening at that place of realizing what he had done. And do I think they'll all eventually come back together? Eventually, but
yeah, maybe.
Man, if you're again, Tiger, Rory, and you passed up $600, $1 billion, whatever it is, and those guys just come waltzing back in, I don't know how you can look at it. The other, just mentioning Tiger, there's so many Tiger kind of markers that Scottie Scheffler is going to have to pass if he wants to become this guy. And that's the one thing, and like obviously the other things will come if he does this, but he has to have a sustained run at world number one. Like, he can't give this thing up anytime soon, because I think that when you look at all the Tiger stats, like, it's majors, but there's so many markers that Tiger had, and not to say that Scottie Scheffler has to be Tiger Woods, but he has to, if he wants to get on that level or become that figure for golf, he has to go on a 2-3-4 year run that's like this. But he's already missed cuts. Tiger never missed cuts.
No.
Tiger has the four highest streaks of the longest stretches of being world number one in the history of the world golf rankings. Scottie Scheffler's nowhere near the top of that list. Like, it is consistent greatness that will make him feel that way. There's nothing he can do on any one day. Like, yeah, if it's a duel with Bryson down the stretch, maybe that makes it feel more real. But it is just the consistent greatness that puts him on that Tiger level. And the other thing is, nobody's ever going to feel like Tiger. And, like, I feel like we all understand this, but let me just state it plainly. The racial thing. Like, Tiger just looks so starkly different than everything on tour. Go look at the galleries that were watching him when he first came on. And it's not going to be like that with Scottie Scheffler.
No.
Ever.
No.
He has resting America face. Like, he just, like, stock golf, okay?
Yeah, and the swing is unique. And, like, the feet shuffling
I tell my kid could not keep his feet still to save his life. So I just tell him, hey, this is the man. Watch him. If you're not going to keep him still, do it like that. There's a little, it's like, but that can't be the quirk that makes us love a guy.
you know, it's not fair. But I got to tell you, I know it used to be the Tiger thing. And even going back to 2019, everybody dunking it on the second nine on Sunday. Like, well, there's the effect of Tiger Woods. I mean, you can make the same argument that Colin Morikawa and Ludvig Ahlberg and Max Homa, they looked up at the leaderboard and they saw Scottie Scheffler. And they said, oh, no, into the water we go or into the bushes in the case of Homa. But it's not fair. But I'm like, no, those guys just aren't good enough. Like, they're just not on his level. And I know in the case of Morikawa, he's a two-time major
champion. He's literally just as good.
Nah, he's not.
No, he's not.
He's not.
One of them is fake because he won it. It's like Bryson's major. He won it in COVID with no fans. So that doesn't count. And then the Open Championship Morikawa won. Like, you can't take it away from him, but there's never been a more like, okay, you're just going to win this major. So,
yeah. I'm sorry. I feel the ways I feels and... Yeah, it feels like he's so much better than everybody else because everybody else stinks. And it's not because, and he is dominant, no question. And boy, some of the shots he was making into, man, the shot on nine, where, man, that is like, there's what, a 4 yard landing area there to give yourself a chance at birdie. Mm-hmm. And then down the stretch where, like, you could conceivably open the door, like, still going for it in two from the pine, I guess it wasn't the pine straw, but from the rough on 13. Putting it exactly where you're supposed to put it on 12, where, Max Homa tried to do it, couldn't do it. Yeah, he's great. But everybody else stinks. I'm sorry. That's just the way I view it.
Yeah, and I mean, there is always an element to that in golf. Like, somebody running away from the pack, unless it is seven birdies on the second nine, then it has to come at capitulation from everybody else. And there's no way I can sit here and tell you that it was the Tiger or the like Tiger effect, but from Scotty. But you mentioned the shot he hit into 12 there. Is there anything better in sport? Like, we have like Gretzky's office, right? For like behind the net. It's like the Tiger shot on Sunday. It's like, it's the least sexy thing in the world.
Yeah,
but then
it's like,
it is
the conservative, like, because, not going for birdie.
Because you don't need to.
Yeah.
And that's, it's just like, that is such a great thing to have. Like, obviously, it's like if the hole in one was called the Tiger shot, that'd be pretty good too. But just the conservative approach to the most dangerous green, because you've got this thing sewn up with seven holes left to play. I don't know. Pretty good thing to have named after you.
Couple other things from me from the Masters. Yeah, I think the great hope is that Ludvig Ahlberg is the guy. Him smiling after the double on 11, and then not just smiling, because like you can view that two ways. You'd be like, oh, well, this guy doesn't care enough. But then like bouncing back in a nice way you know, coming up with some birdies down the stretch and putting himself solo second. Like, that guy is the next great hope to be, you know, 1A to Scotty's 1.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this before where guys kind of burst on the scene and they're young and dumb and they don't know any better, and then the pressures of golf eat them up. And I'm not predicting that, but I think it's entirely in play with him. But if he is able to have, like, he doesn't need to win a major this year by any means. He just played in his first one. But if he is able to be consistently a part of the conversation, and even if that means like he's there on Saturday night and falls away one Sunday morning or something, he just needs to kind of consistently inject himself into it. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend I was like first on this. This guy is, you know, he's like a super stud coming out of PGA Tour U and everything. But one of his first pro starts was at the Canadian Open. And I spent a good chunk of a couple of days following him around because I just wanted to see it. He's huge in person. Like, I'm sure that translates a bit on TV. He's just, he's a massive, massive guy. I think the fact of being put on that European Ryder Cup team so early in his career before he, I mean, he'd won, so I guess not nothing, but before he'd really done anything, it just let him know who he was. You could see the respect going back to that Canadian Open that all the top pros had for him immediately right away. And that is such a big telling sign, especially in a sport like golf, where you can't go out there and dominate somebody else. Like, again, if you're playing match play, you can, but you can't really dominate someone in that way. So for guys to just see the game and go, he's one of us right away, that was all I needed to see. And for him to kind of stamp it home with the result he had and the bounce back, like you said, it was awesome to see. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend he's now officially a part of the club. It's like, I think he has more struggles than success in majors the rest of this year. I just do. But if he's able to prove me wrong, God, I'd love to see it.
Rough weekend for caddies. Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah.
Has to pick a guy up off the scrap heap. I mean, he knows Augusta. Yeah. He's an Augusta National caddy. Tommy Fleetwood has a great 4 days. Ends up T3.
Yeah.
That's a rough one for these guys who make it their career.
Yeah, and that's like his man. Like, this is like one of those longtime player caddy relationships. Ian Finnis is his name. He's very tall. Mm. And yeah, that's got to suck for that guy. But I think that if anyone is like, you know what that is? It's like your wife having a fun girls' night. It's like if you're secure in your marriage, you don't need to worry about that.
Okay.
I love you, honey. Have fun. No.
And the last one for me, I love the Morikawa T flip when he and Scotty Scheffler were about equidistant to the pin to decide, you know, in a major championship, somebody's legacy on the line. You're like, who goes first? And it was an important moment because Scotty got a read off of Collins' shot.
Big time.
Flip the T.
It's weird. Again, golf. Kyle Porter's joke, I'll steal it. Mm-hmm. Totally, like, just totally normal sport.
Yep.
Love it, love it, love it.
All right.
More of that on the Golf Show Pod later today.
But right now, it's time for the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, 19 plus. Bet responsibly. Blue Jays in action, second time this season, against the New York Yankees. Luis Gil on the mound against Chris Bassett. And you know what? Blue Jays are favored in this game on the money line. It's close to a coin flip, though. Minus 115 are the Blue Jays. Minus 105 are the Yankees. The total is 8.5, Brent.
I think I'm going to take the Yankees -1.5, and you get plus 150 on that. That seems pretty fair value to me. That's where my mind's eye goes. I've seen the way these two teams have played. The Yankees ain't the Rockies. And when it's not been teams like the Rockies, it's gone kind of a different way for the Blue Jays. So that's what I'm looking at there.
Yeah, I don't hate that. And the Yankees coming off a very disappointing loss as the bullpen blows it in extra innings coming into this game. So they're going to be a motivated bunch. The total being 8.5. Last time we saw Luis Gil, who throws upper 90s. Yeah, Blue Jays had some issues with him. I like the under also at plus 100 for the Blue Jays and the Yankees. That was the Wake and Rake presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. 19 plus, bet responsibly. When we come back, it's the rematch. Ben Ennis v. Frank Cervelli. Nah, we'll move on. But Frank Cervelli's going to be on.
Yeah, I just, like, I hope. He's combative. I can't promise we're moving on. I can't. Either way, it'll be good.
It'll be good. Frank Cervelli, president of hockey content for DailyFaceoff.com. Next, as the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.